Welcome to Once Every 2 Weeks, where every other week we examine the new music released from King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizards during that short span.
So it only ends up being about 4.5 albums.
Once Every 2 Weeks is a look back at music from the 90s through a modern lens and nostalgic twinge.
Hosted by two guys who have been friends since high school, join us, Tom and Mark, as we examine old hits, forgotten favorites, and overlooked gems as we dive into the music that got us through all the fun of those awesomely awkward, angst-filled teenage years.
One album at a time.
Your voice. Who is this?
Oh man, I can't decide to go with God, your mom, or your conscience.
None of those voices sound familiar to me.
Fair.
How are you today, Mark?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
You know, it's a new year. I'm feeling good.
Glad to hear it.
What have you been up to?
We've been a little busy trying to prep a few upcoming releases for the label since we announced the Regan Ashton album. We've put out a first single for that, and I made a little lyric video for Regan.
Oh, cool.
And we've been pushing the pre-sales and just waiting for vinyl to come in, which is always nothing but question marks.
I watched a recent video on how they produce vinyls, and I was really impressed. It was way cooler than I thought.
It is a pretty fascinating process. Unfortunately, it's also a time-consuming process, and despite what vinyl producers claim is your estimated turnaround, there's always the disclaimer that it can take anywhere from weeks to months longer than anticipated.
So are they basically mechanics of the music industry?
I would say that they're more like the contractors of the record industry. Because, you know, you pay a contractor to redo your kitchen and they're like, oh yeah, I can do it in 3 days. And 6 months later, you're still waiting for them to show up to redo your kitchen.
Cool. Have you been listening to any good new music lately?
A bit.
What have you been listening to?
Lately, in the 6-disc changer of my Honda.
There was a time where that would have made you about the coolest person we knew.
I don't want to do anything illegal, but I would have killed someone in front of their own grandmother for a 6-disc changer in high school. I've been trying to listen to the latest Blink 182 album, which is hard because I really don't like how that album was mixed.
Okay, so the music, the lyrics are awesome. It's the mixing. And for that, we have to thank Travis Kardashian.
Well, he produced it. I don't know if he mixed it as well. I haven't checked the notes that closely, but I'm willing to throw him under the bus. Sure. Because the drums sound great. They're just overpowering and you can't hear anything else in the band unless you turn the bass way down. And if you turn the bass way down, then you can't actually hear the bass guitar. And since I can't feel good about listening to the new Blink, luckily there's new stuff from Gaslight Anthem, as well as Blur, as well as Dogstar.
Wow.
Sadly, I just haven't been able to get into it. I don't think it's as good as the prior Dogstar album. Kind of had some hopes for it, but nope. But then I was pleasantly surprised to discover that Spanish Love Songs have a new album, and that's pretty good too. But they're always great.
Listeners, I do have to say I was able to surprise Mark with new Sunny Day Real Estate coming. And this time it was the actual band Sunny Day Real Estate.
That's true. I was pleasantly surprised that it was actually Jeremy and company.
That it was really who I said it was.
Indeed. And then they announced that they don't have a new album. It's just the new one song to go along with re-recording all of Diary. And it's much less impressive.
I don't want to be a negative Nancy here, but does Diary need to be re-recorded? I feel like it's pretty perfect as is.
They did this whole write-up where they talk about how it's all about, since they've been playing it for 30 years and since they've been getting back together, and that's heavily what they've been playing at their live shows, they felt they wanted to re-record it to reflect what it's become. So, of course, the top comment in the comments section was, well, goodbye, Encircle Symbol Ting. It's been nice to know you. Which made me sad because it's true. When they play it live, they don't put that little ting.
They don't?
No.
Why?
I don't know.
I thought that was something we all unanimously knew we loved.
Oh, we do, but they're artists, so they do what they want. Have you been listening to anything new?
I think I've hit the age where I don't really listen to a lot of new music anymore.
If you look at what I've been listening to, it's all.
Right, that's the kind of new music I would listen to, too.
I don't think I've discovered anyone really new in a long time. Since Spanish Love Songs.
Spanish Love Songs is really good.
They're so good.
I found a new guy on Reddit who's doing some really cool sounding guitar stuff that I hope he forms a band. He's got a solid, real emo sound in all of the best way, and I'm hoping he can form a band because what he's doing is really good. But that's about it for me.
Because despite what MTV wants you to believe, there is in fact an emo sound. And if anyone looks goth and wears eyeliner, they're not playing that sound.
No, but I do have to give credit to one of those bands. I don't know that there is a single recognizable one note where you can find a fan base quite as much as that first piano key in Black Parade from My Chemical Romance. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. I don't dislike My Chemical Romance.
But it's not emo.
No. I don't know if you know, but there is a lovely website out there that may just be called Is It Emo? And has a little search bar, and you can type in a band name, and it will tell you if that band is emo or not.
Yeah.
So if you don't believe us, you can go to that website and type in My Chemical Romance and see what they have to say.
My Chemical Romance is not an emo band. Unlike high school, emo has a longer history than 4 years.
You know what other band is not emo?
What's that?
Buffalo Tom.
I'm not sure about that. Let me double check. No, Buffalo Tom is not an emo band. You're right, Mark. They may not be an emo band, but I will say their lead singer, Bill Janovitz, is a very nice man who emailed me back at 7:27 this morning.
Did he?
He said, thanks for the entrance, but I have declined the invitation, which feels very formal. But I appreciate the response so quickly that he will not be interested in joining us today. I guess it's time that we announced that this episode we're talking about Buffalo Tom and focusing on their fifth studio album, their 1995 summer jam, Sleepy Eyed.
That is true. And for me, this is an extra special episode. At least it's extra personal to me since for the entire duration of our friendship, I have been trying to convince Tom that he needs to be listening to this band. And for whatever fat-headed reason, from day one of our friendship, he's decided instead of listening to me, he would rather miss out.
Mark, I've been busy.
Doing what? Not going to shows with me?
You only gave me 30 years to listen to them. Come on.
So at this point, I can admit that this entire podcast has been a ruse, and now that I've tricked Tom into listening to Buffalo Tom, I can throw in the towel.
Bye, guys.
This has been another episode of Once Every 2 Weeks. Okay, maybe not. We still have plenty of other bands that I need to get you to listen to. But after all this time, now that I've finally worn you down, what has been your initial reaction to the band?
So I have to admit, I dig it. This album I like. I've listened to it a lot over the last, you know, far too long since we were planning this episode back in December.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like them.
Did you like it enough to try to expand into the rest of the catalog, or did you just stick to this one for the episode?
So I want to stick to this one for the episode just so I did not cross streams.
Understood.
There's something I wanted to ask you about, though, with them. So we've covered a lot of music, and a lot of it, the sound is, I don't want to say timeless because it's definitely dated, but it could sounds like stuff that could still be performed and played and like made today.
Mm-hmm.
This does not. There's something quintessentially 90s about this album. It is locked in the middle of the 90s. That is where it is from, which I think we'll get into why it's so iconic in like pop culture from the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it about this sound that just traps it in a place and time where like Sunny Day Real Estate is not? Or do you disagree?
I think that's tough for me to address since I have been into Buffalo Tom since the 90s. I think I can see what you're saying. And I think it's a product of there were certain genres in the 90s like grunge that were very much big and present. But there were also a lot of little individual bands that did their own thing, developed their own sound. And so I think what it is it was a time and a place where there was a lot of, I don't want to say that people aren't being creative now, but it seems like a lot of the creativity since the early aughts has been driven by what's popular as opposed to people doing their own things regardless of what was popular. We'd had a conversation the other day where we kind of touched on this idea that the shift in musical sensibilities from like the 50s to the 90s, there was so much in between. But from the 90s to present day, there hasn't been much in the way of innovation in what music can be or what popular music is, right?
Yeah.
And so I think for that reason, those people who were doing their own things, despite of what was popular in the 90s, are doomed to sound like they're stuck in the 90s because it was trends that didn't catch on enough to maintain into current mainstream sounds.
Yeah.
Good question. But I will say I'm glad that you finally listened to Buffalo Tom, and I'm glad that you did, in fact, enjoy them.
I have. Yeah, I did enjoy them.
I thought you might.
This is a band that got together during their college years.
Ooh. they started late.
They did, at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. And Mark, I don't know about you, but I could not find anywhere that they participated in any Battle of the Bands.
I also did not find anything about Battle of the Bands. Sadly, the histories that I found on the band weren't nearly as comprehensive as I would have liked.
No, not at all.
We discovered that they met while students at college, and I didn't even see anything as far as what any of the members were studying in college.
No, I know some stuff about their later life, and I know that Tom was the only one who had been in a band previously, but that's about all I could find.
Well, we've mentioned two of the members, so I think maybe we should introduce them all. So like you said, they met in college when guitarist Bill Janovitz, guitarist Chris Colburn, and guitarist Tom Magnus decided to start a band together, only to quickly realize that they had a small problem.
They were all guitarists.
Yep. And again, with the uncomprehensive histories, I don't know if it was decided that Bill had the best voice or if it's just that Chris and Tom drew short straws, but Chris then moved to bass and Tom got stuck behind the drums.
When you say they moved or got stuck, does that mean that they didn't know how to play those instruments before?
Honestly, I don't know.
Yes, it does.
Did you find an answer to that?
I did. Chris did not play the bass, and he had to learn how to play the bass for the band, which kind of speaks to his general music talent and his ability to understand and pick up instruments.
And just his commitment to jam with those guys.
Nobody's questioning his commitment to Sparkle Motion.
And did Tom know any drums?
I couldn't find anything definitive. I found a couple things where they said he didn't, so I'm not as comfortable saying no, but give me a soft commitment that he did not, or at least wasn't proficient.
Well, you'd mentioned that he'd been in a band before, right?
He was a guitarist in a band before.
Right. Any guitarist in a band at some point when practice gets boring is going to jump at the chance to screw around on a drum kit when the drummer gets up to pee.
Oh, yeah.
And that, folks, for the last 38 years has been the lineup of the band Buffalo Tom.
Now, they started out in Amherst. They were influenced by the scene, but they ultimately hail from Boston.
Yes.
So we're going to defer to the Music Museum of New England to give us a brief overview of the band and of Buffalo Tom. They say the following: with intelligent tunesmithing, a heart-on-sleeve sensibility, and what has been described as neo-psychedelic country bent, Buffalo Tom was the ever-clever counterpart to the more wit-challenged alt, indie, and grunge acts of the late 80s and early 90s. The band gradually morphed into a standard rock outfit, but one that could consistently deliver both balls-to-the-wall barnstormers and beatific ballads with equal aplomb. Initially, some labeled the group Dinosaur Jr. Jr. Frontman Jay Maskus of that band produced Buffalo Tom's first two albums, and the group's roots and acoustical similarities are undeniable. But by the time they cut their third album, Let Me Come Over, the band had developed the multifaceted musical balance that's been their calling card ever since. A review in The War Against Silence called Let Me Come Over, quote, "the magical middle point between furious distortion and calm grandeur," which many would agree summarizes the bulk of their work. That's a nice description of this album.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
It is my favorite of theirs, and I think it is their strongest. And I think by the time they got to this, they had already made a handful of albums. And by that third album they mentioned there, Let Me Come Over, they had kind of settled into who they were as a band and had started making albums that are on the level of the quintessential Buffalo Tom sound. But by the time they got to this, they just kind of settled into that groove of that sound. And really, this just perfects it. That overview does make the note that Jay Maskus produced the band's first two albums. And fun fact, he was also a friend of theirs from school, and in addition to Dinosaur Jr. forming 2 years prior, while the members of that band were students at the same college, two of the founding members of the Pixies also met at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst in 1985.
That's a lot of talent at one college at one time.
And talking about those early days, Bill has said, "Neil Young is a giant influence on me as a songwriter and guitar player. But when I saw Jay Maskus do what he was doing with garaging up the stuff I grew up with and making it into punk rock and new, exciting, and different, but still with one foot firmly placed in the past and obviously taking a lot of influence from Neil, it made so much sense to me."
Hey, Mark, speaking of Bill, did you know that aside from his musical career, Janovitz has also been successful in the real estate industry?
Yes, but only because I came across that in my research for this album.
Well, you didn't include it in the notes, and I thought it was important to note that he's a realtor in Massachusetts with the real estate group Compass. He's also written a couple of books, Rocks Off, 50 Tracks That Tell the Story of the Rolling Stones, and Exile on Main Street, both on none other than the Rolling Stones. And he wrote a book on Tulsa musical legend Leon Russell. Chris now does graphic design, and Tom does software development.
All of this in addition to still being in the band, because they do have a new album that is coming out later this year.
Good for them.
If I remember correctly, because it's been a while since we last recorded, but I believe around the time that we did the Rage episode, you had mentioned to me that you just happened to be listening to a lot of Dinosaur Jr. Is that correct?
I was listening to some Dinosaur Jr. at that time.
Having gone from that Dinosaur Jr. phase into listening to Buffalo Tom, do you hear that influence? Do you think it still stands out on this record?
I think they've become their own band. I haven't listened to the first two albums to hear that influence, but I don't hear it as much here. It sounds more like if I listen to Pearl Jam and Nirvana, they're obviously from the same scene.
Right.
But I wouldn't say that one is Nirvana Jr. or Pearl Jam Jr. It's a different sound, but it's complementary. Like if they played a show together, they would be a really great lineup.
Okay. Now, we both learned about what everyone's currently doing, but do you know where the band got its name?
I do, but only because I did my research for this album.
So having been a fan of Buffalo Tom for nearly 30 years now, I actually had never really known where the name came from. I never questioned it. I just went with it. But apparently the guys were at a party and they got talking about this new band they were starting and trying to think of a name, and a bunch of people were throwing ideas around. And at one point, a friend of theirs connected the threads that Bill, Chris, and Tom were all fans of Neil Young, and Neil had been a member of the band Buffalo Springfield, and Bill's name was Bill, so maybe they could be slick and clever and can pay homage to Neil and call themselves Buffalo Bill. But they all quickly shot that down, since Bill was the front man and the most outgoing. It would make too much sense, and it would also seem like it was just his band. But they didn't hate that connection enough to completely dismiss the idea outright, and someone suggested it might actually be more funny to name it after Tom, since he was the shyest and admittedly kind of liked to hide behind the drums. And so with little further thought, they agreed that could be funny. And so instead of Buffalo Bill, they decided to be Buffalo Tom.
I like it.
And like at least one or two other bands who we've covered who have come up with clever placeholder names, Toad, I'm looking at you. They ran with it and never bothered to get around to coming up with anything else. Tom himself has said, "We didn't think too seriously about it at the time because we were just playing parties and shows at school, and it just kind of stuck."
Speaking of band names, did you know that Buffalo Tom has a song called Mineral, which is where the Gloria record got their name?
I did know they had a song called Mineral, and I have frequently been curious if that's where the band Mineral got their name.
It is.
There is nothing in that song that says anything about a Gloria record, but the Gloria record does feature Chris Simpson and Jeremy Gomez, who were both members of the band Mineral prior to forming the Gloria record.
Come on, everybody considers the Gloria record a continuation of Mineral.
I don't.
You're such a pedant.
Well, I also don't consider the Gloria record a continuation of Ivy Lee, since Gloria record guitarist Brian Hubbard was previously in a band called Ivy Lee, but they didn't have nearly the success that Mineral did.
No, but the sound is so similar.
The only reason I bring up Brian is because Ivy Lee was a high school band that he played guitar in that was comprised of friends of my older brother, John, and in junior high, when I got interested in learning guitar, playing guitar, I was able to take lessons from Brian, and he is the one who turned me on to Buffalo Tom. And so on his recommendation, I went out and I picked up a Buffalo Tom record.
Which one?
Bird Brain was the first one I picked up.
Okay.
I think that's just the only one that was on the shelf. And from there, I then got into them and picked up the rest. I think I was eighth grade when I started taking lessons from him and started getting into Buffalo Tom. So when we met the following year, I hadn't necessarily been into them long, but I knew they were great. Anyway, aside from the Dinosaur Jr. connection, the band continued to soldier on, and their main claim to fame came thanks to the short-lived but hugely popular and arguably influential TV show, My So-Called Life. The soundtrack of that show, which when Vulture wrote a review of it in 2014, called it the musical equivalent of the coziest flannel. It features the Buffalo Tom song, Soda Jerk. However, it was later in that season that Buffalo Tom made an appearance on the show as the background band in a club sequence. And then later in that episode, there was another scene that used another Buffalo Tom song. And as a 2015 review from the AV Club put it, with Late at Night, Buffalo Tom became the soundtrack to teen angst.
Were you a My So-Called Life fan?
I was not, and I still haven't ever gotten around to watching it. It's on my list to get to someday, but no. My fandom of Buffalo Tom is completely unattached to my fandom of Claire Danes.
I had not watched it in high school either. Christine was a big fan. Mm-hmm. Like every other girl in the 90s, she had a massive crush on Jared Catalano.
Which is the character's name that was played by Jared Leto.
And he had a band on that show, which was way better than 30 Seconds to Mars.
Really? What were they called?
I don't know, something like 29 Seconds to Mars.
Going for the old better than Ezra approach.
So Bill did an interview back in 2017 with Salon, and he talked about how they were coming up and they started to see some success and they were playing some festivals, but their main fan base seemed to be the same guys that fell into the Dave Matthews Band, White Hat crowd, and My So-Called Life literally changed that overnight. When he was talking about this whole ordeal, he said, quote, "Some fans at My So-Called Life were music fans, and clearly there was a Boston connection. I think the Lemonheads were in there. Juliana Hatfield was a guest star in an episode. She played an angel. And they just asked us, and we said, sure. I mean, my wife was thrilled. She was older than the demographic, but it really spoke to her about her experience when we were in high school in the 80s. It was a great experience doing it. The kids were amazing. Claire Danes was only 15 at the time, and they were so unabashed. They were so unjaded. They all showed up and hung out in our trailer and asked us what it was like to be a band. They really wanted to talk about bands and what it's like to be on the road. We were sort of like elder statesmen. It really made us feel old." But then after that show, the impact was instant. All of a sudden, we started seeing a bunch more young, pretty women at our shows. I mean, any woman was a welcome addition for our crowd.
Yeah, that was a huge moment for the band. But to counter that experience, in that same interview, he goes on to talk about reluctantly making an appearance on another show that wasn't any good called Catwalk. And he talks about how they ended up being pressured into it by Danny Goldberg, who was the head of their label at the time and also Nirvana's manager. And he follows up the story you just told by saying, "I was hoping it would just go away and nobody would see it. Nobody else that I knew about it. But of course, it did start to get played big time on MTV. We were in San Francisco doing a string of West Coast dates, and some guy was holding up a sign in Slim's in San Francisco. He kept going, 'Bill, Bill,' and I would look over and he's got the sign that says Catwalk. Why?" It was like my worst nightmare.
Do you know what Catwalk was?
It was a Canadian show that, from the way that he describes it, it was a show that sounds like if somebody who was into Models Inc. had made a show about being in a band.
Gross.
Yeah, it sounds horrible. But I do like, at least from the prior story about My So-Called Life, how there seemed to be, by whoever was on that show, like Bill said, into the Boston music scene.
I don't think you're pronouncing that correctly.
Sorry, the Boston music scene.
Thank you. From Bill on music that was coming out of Western Mass at the time. He said, "It's funny to look back and see us, Dinosaur Jr., Sebado," which was an offshoot of Dinosaur Jr., and technically the Pixies were coming from there, and it made people think that there was actually more than was going on. It was actually kind of dead back then. What was going on at UMass was that it was the 80s with 25,000 kids and maybe 20 to 200 people, being generous, would be at the Husker Du show. We'd go to see Dinosaur Jr. play to 40 people. I saw the Pixies play at the basement of Sheehan's, which was a great bar in downtown Northampton, and there were maybe 50 people there. Certainly looking back, I'm as guilty as anybody else for nostalgizing the past, but when we got to do things like play the channel with the Lemonheads and Galaxy 500, it was an exciting time for sure. Being able to play anywhere was exciting, but getting on bills like that were great."
That would be a great bill.
Right?
So with that success that came from My So-Called Life, both of the songs that were featured with that show were from their fourth album, Big Red Letter Day. And they followed that up with album number 5, Sleepy Eyed. Sleepy Eyed was produced by Buffalo Tom and John Tanger Puddin Agnello.
Can you repeat that last name, please?
Agnello?
That's definitely the part I need you to repeat. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, no problem. I did come across a bit about him that listed a handful of different nicknames for him.
Was there any reference to how he got that nickname?
None whatsoever. So without context, we present John Tanger Puddin Agnello. As a producer, he'd only worked on a couple of albums prior to Sleepy Eyed, but since then he's done a lot of great work. He's produced albums from some more well-known bands like All, The Hold Steady, Parker Millsap, Jessica Lee Mayfield, Hopalong, Kurt Vile, Sonic Youth, and the Murder City Devils, which is a pretty solid mix of sounds.
Yeah.
He also produced albums for bands like Camber, Triple Fast Action, and Walt Mink, all of whom I know and like thanks to Deep Ellum Records and their compilation series, The Emo Diaries.
Dude, The Emo Diaries were so good. Quick question for you.
Okay.
Do you know who had the first song on the first Emo Diaries album?
Jimmy Eat World.
Did you know that, or did you just assume it because I was asking?
Oh, I knew that. Actually, I knew that they were on there. I didn't know that they were actually track one, but I just figured since you were asking then that they were track one.
Yep, opener, song number one. They opened with opener, yep.
For me, the most impressive thing in his history was discovering that he had produced two albums that I love from a rock outfit out of Switzerland, whom I love, and have yet to meet anyone else who has ever heard of the band Favez. And after finishing this episode, you should go listen to them because they are great.
So when it was time for Sleepy Eyed, they headed to Woodstock, New York to record. And this is a bit of a return to their pre-Big Red Letter day. This album is less polished, which is what I was talking about. I think getting some of that 90s raw sound, but it is really well crafted.
So we'll kind of go into this with some of the reviews that we talk about. People talk about how it's less polished and more raw. And when it came to the production, they did do a lot of full band together live tracking, which, as we've discussed on prior episodes, is what bands do when they want to try to capture their live sound.
Yeah.
Bill, talking about the album, had mentioned that there are seven of these songs where the vocals were captured live with the rest of it. And so half the songs on here were live track vocals and the others then had been punched in later. But with all the talk about it being raw, I feel like that was just something that people kind of focused on to have something to grasp onto, because I don't think that if you listen to this compared to Big Red Letter Day, which is an album that he said that they took way too much time focusing on getting every little thing to sound perfect.
Yeah.
I don't mean to slight the band, but I don't hear really a drastic difference in production quality in the two albums. But I also don't hear a drastic difference in production quality from Let Me Come Over to Big Red Letter Day. And so I know a lot of people talk about it, but it's kind of one of the reasons I had hoped that maybe you had gotten into the others. So you could chime in on this, but it's okay. For me personally, I don't hear a massive difference in the quality. And when I listen to Buffalo Tom, I'll frequently just mix the three albums together because they just work pretty seamlessly, in my opinion.
As a side note, Mark, Christine wants me to ask you if you have watched Louder Milk.
Yes.
Thoughts?
Very much enjoy it. It's the best thing that Rob Livingston has done since Office Space.
I didn't know it was Rob Livingston. Okay, that makes me want to watch it more.
With maybe the exception of his role in Band of Brothers, where he counters actor Damian Lewis, who to me looks like a clone of Bill Janovitz.
And we're back to Buffalo Tom.
Put their pictures next to each other and tell me I'm wrong.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Damian Lewis could play Bill Janovitz in a biopic.
So Sleepy Eyed was released July 11th, 1995. It peaked at number 4 on the Heat Seekers chart and at number 98 on the Australian album sales chart. But they sadly never exploded as a band beyond that.
So I think we've gone over most of the musicians, but because they are all extremely talented, we'll discuss what each of them does. So throughout the album, Bill is on vocals, guitar, piano, organ, and he does the harmonica on track 7.
Mm-hmm.
Chris does bass, cello, guitar, vocals, and he's harmonica on track 3.
Hmm.
And then Tom does drums, percussion, and is the Tom of the group.
Everyone has one.
Yeah, they're usually the best part of a group.
Are they, though?
I mean, just look at this podcast. I might be biased, but I tend to think yes.
Your mom says you're a catch.
And popular.
So Sleepy Eyed was pretty well received. In a review from AllMusic, they said, "Put Sleepy Eyed in your CD player, hit play, and prepare to be amazed. Tangerine, the lead-off cut, signals the brief but welcome return of Dinosaur Jr. Jr. with charging neo-grunge guitars and galloping drums, the likes of which you haven't heard from this band since Birdbrain. But of course, Buffalo Tom sound a lot tighter, stronger, and more confident when they dig into the big shaggy dog rock that they did 5 years previous. Cut for Cut, it's a far more direct and straightforward rock album than anything they'd managed since their creative breakthrough on Let Me Come Over. They sound like they're having a great time just turning up the amps and letting rip. Especially Bill Janovitz, whose rock dude guitar outros are a hoot. And this is one band who I cannot begrudge for enjoying themselves every once in a while.
I like that. I want to go to an awkward review.
Okay.
And we'll talk about why it's awkward. Not that it's bad. Singer Bill Janovitz is not the best in the world, but he's more than capable. The band has a sharp, jangly guitar sound and good enough songs to hold interest throughout. Standout tracks are Tangerine and Summer, although the rest all have something going for them. I don't know if they like this album or not.
It is really hard to say, right?
Right?
I get that liking things isn't cool, so it needlessly finds dumb things to say because Pitchfork was still a year away from starting up and cornering that market. So I did like what the album bio on their label site had to say about it. Boston's Buffalo Tom began life as a trio of pre-grunge, neo-psychedelic guitar maulers, but over the next dozen years, they matured into a considerably more dynamic and intelligent band, capable of generating crunchy rockers or acoustic ballads with equal precision, all of which possessed heart, soul, and a compassionate intelligence. Moving back into stripped-down power trio mode on Sleepy-Eyed, Buffalo Tom go back to the old neighborhood and show everybody how much bigger and stronger they've become. It's sort of like a high school reunion, but louder and a lot more fun. And I like that because it's very similar to the overview that we went through from the Music Museum of New England.
Yeah.
But I think they phrase a couple of things to be a little more apt, talking about the compassionate intelligence rather than just saying that the other bands of the era lacked wit. I just like the way that they
stay positive. They don't have to dump on other people.
Yeah. And I don't think it's necessarily like the positive versus the dumping. They're a little more accurate to who the band is at its heart.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and read Trouser Press, who said, produced by John Agnello, Sleepy Eyed restores much of the guitar firepower to the trio sound, and not a moment too soon. Simultaneously grungy and clean, anthemic sing-alongs like Tangerine and It's You do a lot to restore Buffalo Tom's erstwhile status as everyone's favorite raucously sincere college rockers, a rewarding synthesis of the two approaches. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's really where that disconnect and sound that you're hearing of this being so clearly 90s.
I think so.
In the 90s, the indie sound was clearly like what's referred to here as the college rock sound. And I think there's been so much a shift in what that college rock sound is these days.
Right.
With the exception of the couple of bands that are still around, like Buffalo Tom and Superchunk, there's not a whole lot of other people carrying that torch.
Right.
In a review from Select magazine, they said, it's far from solely composed of those wistful landslides of the heart they're best known for. The cantering, blameless, anthemic pop of the opening Tangerine brazenly comes on, and by the time they reach It's You, they're cavalierly proclaiming, I've run low on sorrow. Aside from the new improved pop angle, Sleepy-Eyed is a rough-hewn return to their full-bore amp roar and their best album to date, with healthy measures of the old Buffalo Tom values of searing poignancy.
In a retrospective review, I like what Jack Rabbit of The Big Takeover said when he described Sleepy-Eyed as a masterpiece, and he said that the band's expert, exciting blend of 60s rock and 80s post-punk never sounded so good.
Nice. I am totally with Jack on that. But some of the reviews that we came across talk about comparing Sleepy Eyed to the prior two albums. Big Red Letter Day and Let Me Come Over are both solid albums, so I understand why reviewers have their favorites. So do I. And as we are going to go through these track by track, we'll also be talking about those albums, comparing them a bit, so we can hopefully once and for all put the argument to rest and prove that Sleepy Eyed is in fact Buffalo Tom's best record.
Having only listened to Sleepy-Eyed, you have my consensus.
Excellent.
This album opens with the song Tangerine, and like a lot of reviews say, this song just rocks. It comes on hard. Mm-hmm. You're thrown right into this album.
Yeah, it opens with a banger. And that isn't necessarily a new way to approach things for the band. However, while this is still a strong song, Staples, which is the opener on Let Me Come Over, it doesn't jam this hard right out of the gate. And Soda Jerk, which is their most successful song to date, which opens Big Red Letter Day, has a great opening line and a solid pace. And as much as I love that song, it still doesn't match the strength and energy of Tangerine.
The opening lines, the vocals, and the instruments all hit at the same time. On that first note, there's no intro. It's all just there.
Not a musical intro, but I'd argue there's a slight intro here.
Slight?
Ever so slight.
Oh, you mean we're talking about an intro? You mean an inhalation intro?
Right. Like I said, it's not necessarily a musical intro.
He does. We have a strong inhalation. Thank you. Okay. I apologize, Mark. I was wrong. After the quick inhalation, everything just comes in at you at once, which the inhalation thing's got a punk feel to it.
Before everyone hits on the first note of the track, it's kind of counted in with Bill making a quick, sharp breath noise. Just like that, which by itself I don't hate, and it works extra well when paired with the album's opening line, which is, "Breathless from the coffee, I drop my newspaper down."
Well, we're talking about lyrics. A common trend with a lot of the reviews that we touched on and other ones that we've read is that they focus on the band's lyrics throughout their entire catalog, and they use words like poignant and wistful, and there's certainly moments on Sleepy Eyed where they hit that just right, but there's a lot of moments where they're just light and fun, like the band is enjoying themselves here, mm-hmm. and even more than a few times where, like Matt Tolbert, there might be any of the above mixed with some of the good old-fashioned Pure Mountain gibberish.
And I'm okay with that.
Mark, is that your favorite term for describing music, Pure Mountain gibberish?
I mean, when it's appropriate, I think it has become my favorite term for lyrics.
I like it.
And it's not that they're intentionally nonsensical, but I think throughout they're certainly more disjointed, because I think in his approach he'll have a theme that he's going for, but it's definitely not linear thought. But with this one specifically, examining the lyrics in an interview with Select Magazine, they asked Bill, "Tangerine says, just a little haiku to say how much I like you. Does the song adhere to the strict syllable count?" To which Bill admitted, "No." "I just thought I was being so clever getting that word into the song without being pretentious." And I agree with both those points, that good for him for working it in, and he does in fact use it unpretentiously.
It's about as unpretentious as a nice soft summer rain.
Track two.
Summer. And in true Buffalo Tom fashion, this is not a joyful celebration of the summer season, but instead they're lamenting the end of summer.
Mm-hmm. Also in true Buffalo Tom fashion, despite the strength of the openers, all three albums make a move that most bands would usually wait a couple more tracks into the album to make. But Buffalo Tom is confident enough and good enough that they can shift gears on the second track into more somber song territory. And on all three albums, it feels like the right move.
It does.
Tail Lights Fade off of Let Me Come Over and Big Red Letter Days I'm Allowed are a pair of tracks that individually to me sit near the top of the Buffalo Tom catalog. And that's not to say that Summer isn't a good song. To its credit, Summer manages to still be somber, but has a greater sense of urgency to it than those other two tracks, which remain much more pensive. And the urgency on Summer really helps the album flow, not just in shifting gears down out of such a rock opener, which nicely helps establish the ups and downs of the album's flow.
Yeah.
But it then transitions equally well into track three. And it's here where Sleepy Eyed really begins to set itself apart ahead of those other two albums.
But before we jump over to this track, let's take a moment to point out that while Bill sings lead, Chris has been known to take vocals on a song or two on prior albums and occasionally adds a harmony line. But on Summer, there's a couple of moments where Chris comes in singing a second lead line around the chorus that fills in around the gaps in the cadence of Bill's vocal delivery and creates a nice, deeper rhythmic effect.
True that.
And there's a nice electric guitar solo that's not too flashy that kicks in around a minute and a half.
Lyrically, the words aren't complex or trying to be super deep, but combined with the sincerity of Janovitz's delivery, they are solemn enough to convey that bittersweet feeling you get, like Tom pointed out, at the end of Summer, in that moment when you recognize that summer is over. Which, of course, Tom, co-host Tom, not of the Buffalo variety, might not be familiar with, because he is a monster who wishes it were winter all year long.
I was going to say, the end of summer is a celebratory thing for me. It's not sad at all. Honestly, this is one of my favorite songs. And while I did like, because I listened to this for the first time and I did like the opening of Tangerine, Summer really sold me. I think it was during this song, a little over halfway, when I realized, okay, I like Buffalo Tom.
Like I said, a lot of bands will kind of wait a couple of songs to kind of establish before they shift things up. But in mixing it up right out of the gate, you show the opposite ends of their dynamic and what they're capable of. And it really helps you understand who they are as a band and puts you in a good place for everything that comes next that's going to be in between those two ends of the spectrum.
I do want to say I did listen to this album very intentionally in its structure.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed that and I found it really interesting how quickly they shifted gears here. I was reading Colin Malloy's Substack, and he talked about how important it is to listen to albums. And I think for the most part, you and I talked about this, Mark, but I think for the most part, he's talking about older albums and the albums of like the Decemberists, because he said the artist puts so much attention into how the album goes together, how the songs play off each other, how it builds,
mm-hmm.
which is something I disregarded. I've been part of this streaming scene and the Napster scene for long enough that I listen to songs on repeat or in whatever order I like. But slowing down and listening to it, I have a real appreciation for the way this album builds mm-hmm. and those songs build off of each other, and the quick juxtaposition between one and two really shows a lot of confidence of the band, but it also shows a pretty big dynamic range in what they can do, right?
Absolutely.
And that's not something you usually see in the first two songs. I don't know how it fits into the story they're telling of the album, but it really strikes me as an interesting decision.
Yep. You could say they knock it out of the park or out of the kitchen door.
Do you knock things out of the kitchen door? Song three, kitchen door.
Yes, that was a bit of a stretch.
I was just going to lean into it and go, let's just...
So as we mentioned on the last track, Chris has been known to sing and occasionally take over lead vocal duties. And here on Sleepy Eyed, we find Colburn tagging in earlier than on any of their albums up to that point. And I ain't mad about it. Like we said, track two flows well enough into track three. And part of that is credit to the album sequencing. And part of that is due to the fact that somewhere in writing these songs or making this album, they really found a way to make that vocal handoff feel much more smooth and natural and even more coherent with the album as a whole than on prior efforts. Because with Big Red Letter Days, My Responsibility, and Darl, and I'm Not There from Let Me Come Over, all of those songs kind of stick out on the albums. They don't always work as well meshing with those respective albums as a whole. But on Sleepy Eyed, they really nail it, and not just here with Kitchen Door, but even on the other two tracks that Colburn sings lead, they all vibe really well together with these surrounding songs and all of the songs on the album.
Yeah.
Being unfamiliar with the band prior to that point, did you find it disjointing when all of a sudden the vocal sounded different?
I didn't. I just went with it. I was fine.
Nice.
It flowed here. I'm interested to go listen to Big Red Letter Day, which I'll probably end up doing this weekend, and see if I feel the same way. Lyrically, this isn't a big, deep, earth-shattering, and it's not a moving song. It's just basically a great showcase for the band, just being a solid band who are clearly having fun with what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
None of it's complex or showy. You could even say that at first glance, they seem like fairly simple parts. But if you listen to them closely, the guitar throws in some subtle flash, adding a few extra low-key notes to a lick to keep something interesting. And the same goes with the drums. Instead of going for the typical move of adding more fills, Tom will instead manage to throw in a few quick breaks in the beat in a way that doesn't draw attention to itself and works more to subconsciously mix things up and keep it engaging to the listener.
So you're saying he's like the anti-Travis Barker?
Yeah, he doesn't decide to sacrifice this entire album so he can stoke his own ego.
There are also some wonderful understated supporting vocals going at key moments, not to mention that Chris lays down a bass harmonica solo at around the 122 mark, which then after about 10 seconds gets joined by some lovely ripping dirty electric guitar riffage that just might make you want to scream in cathartic release of all the rock.
It is total rock. And blending a harmonica into rock, that's a pretty dope move.
Yep.
And they pulled it off.
Quite well.
All of this about scratching your finger on a door, man.
Yep.
I don't understand the lyrics of this song. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I don't like it.
Right.
But when he's like, I'm the number on your kitchen door. I'm the gifted son you cannot scorn. I'm the number on your kitchen door. Please remember just to keep the score. I don't know what that means.
I don't either. It opens, I scratch my finger on the door in front of you. You scratch your finger at the girl outside. That's a bigger responsibility. What?
I don't know. Like Cinderella, she just sweeps the floor.
Yeah.
The lyrics don't follow any sort of rules to songwriting.
I appreciate your attempt at a solid segue there, and I don't want to discredit the effort, but...
No, they do follow rules of songwriting, but they don't follow rules of logic.
Exactly. Because there is very much a solid structure in them, and there's a balance to how everything flows. And going back to how and why I was introduced to this band, it was very much because of the rules of songwriting, which is why my guitar teacher recommended them to me. So, track four, Rules.
I love this song because it opens with some wonderful off-key screams that seem to be that cathartic release that Mark mentioned of all the pent-up rock. I don't know if you know this about me, Mark, but I really like songs with screaming.
You know, I did know that about you. I think that's why we're friends. I will concede on this one that for all that talk about being more raw or return to the days of Dinosaur Jr. Jr., on this one, there is something to it. And I suspect that it's mostly Bill and his vocal delivery leaning into the deeper end of his range. He kind of digs down and gets a little lower on where he hits a lot of these words. And that's more in tune with what they were doing, especially on the title track of their second album, Bird Brain, and a couple other songs off of that one, like Fortune Teller or Bleeding Heart. And it's a vibe that Let Me Come Over and Big Red Letter Day are both lacking. So it's kind of nice to have that revisited here on Sleepy Eyed and kind of give you a reminder of why I fell in love with them in the first place.
You know, I really do like Buffalo Tom, and if there's anybody I have to thank for that, Mark, it's you.
Aw, best segue ever. Track five, It's You.
It's me?
No, you just said it was me.
It's us.
It's You returns the boys to the present default trademark Buffalo Tom sound that has been consistent on the prior couple of releases, but it's still really a pretty subtle shift. It's a slight and minor adjustment. And on the whole, while this track is not my favorite on the album, it still ain't a bad song and in no way feels like a filler track. Which brings us to another important way in which Sleepy Eyed rises above the other Buffalo Tom albums. Not that I think anything on the prior two could be considered filler, but even the weaker songs on Sleepy Eyed are still middle of the catalog songs. Big Red Letter Day and Let Me Come Over both have songs that top my list of all-time Buffalo Tom favorites, but they also have songs that I put at the bottom of the barrel. There's a level of consistency here through Sleepy Eyed that the other two can't match.
Yeah, that's the thing about this. Even the songs I'm less interested in, I won't skip. Like this, I'm not going to hear this and be like, oh, skip, because I don't love it. It's not bad.
That said, I'm excited to hear you give those other albums a listen, and I want to hear your notes on what you think of them when you discover the extended catalog.
Nice. Song six, When You Discover. Bunch of pure mountain gibberish.
It does walk that line nicely. Musically, it's such a jam that it kind of makes up for the lyrics not necessarily being coherent.
Yeah.
It's got a nice, light, upbeat, kind of poppy and fun vibe to it that makes it very easy to get into and kind of brings you up before the pendulum swings back to that Buffalo Tom thoughtful bummer goodness.
I like this song.
It's a good one. This is also the song where the album gets its name.
It is.
Lyrically, despite it not necessarily making linear sense, I still really kind of like these lyrics.
Yeah.
Come back when you are done, looking down on everyone. Ain't it hard when you discover that you're dumb? Open up your sleepy eyes, cut off all your family ties. Ain't it hard when you realize you're young? All these noises in your head, last time I saw you, you were dead.
Just some good, fun, random thoughts for a Sunday night, huh?
Track seven, Sunday Night.
This song's a little bit change of pace because a lot of the tracks on the album just kind of jump in with both feet, which the album did itself. It kicks off with vocals on the first note. But here in Sunday Night, they actually take time to get us a proper intro, and it's a nice change of pace. It does sound nice. And there's some sick harmonica.
And it comes in around the middle of the album, so I guess it could even be seen that that intro acts like kind of a short intermission.
Okay, that's fair.
Where the band changes pace from the high-spirited rock of the prior track to bring us back to more serious tone. And after seriously jamming it out together for nearly a minute at the beginning of the song, and when I say seriously jamming, I don't mean they're rocking hard, I mean it's a fairly serious tone to the jam.
Yeah.
But they manage to take it one somber step further. They let everything drop out but the guitar, which shifts then to a softer and even more thoughtful guitar line, which does get accompanied by some sparse, light cymbal hits. And then Bill comes in with some equally brooding lyrics before the rest of the band slowly work their way back into the mix.
I really like the harmonica in this, which last time we heard the harmonica was Chris. Mm-hmm. This time it's Bill playing the harmonica.
Yeah. And like the rest of the track, there's something about the harmonica playing here, whereas that first harmonica solo is kind of rocking and upbeat in this one. It has some soft, sad qualities to it, and it's just kind of nice, which isn't always an easy way to describe how a harmonica sounds. But this is the song that has all the feels to it.
It does have all the feels.
Just looking at the lyrics, it opens up, "Sunday night, now I know how the night can pass slow. All kinds of ugly outside, that's right. And I'm all alone tonight."
I was looking at the next stanza where he says, "Hangover throbs inside my head. All the stupid things I've said now make me wish I was dead. It's nighttime, Greenwich Mean Time. A man puts up a detour sign and the waterfalls of regret unleash in a torrent of cold sweat." We've all been there, right?
Yeah, I think both of those. I think that first line I like because it kind of has a nostalgic feel to it that takes me back to the days before cell phones where you're just hanging out in your room, listening to music, feeling lonely, waiting for a call.
Yeah, I feel like those experiences are how back in the 90s you earned your stripes as a teenager.
Solid.
Song 8, Your Stripes.
While the band is great at writing beautiful bummer tracks, like the prior one, they're just as good at the upbeat rock, and even better at having their albums make drastic mood swings between the two. And here, after some lovely, almost organ-sounding feedback, it transitions seamlessly back to the rock.
It really does.
Lyrically, it does have some typical scratch-your-head lyrics.
Yeah.
"In case of deja vu, I forgot that I knew you. Every day was like a grape or as rich as chocolate cake."
Sounds like it was written by my 7-year-old.
Sounds like Bill was hungry.
You know, I didn't love this song. Mm-hmm. It's not bad. I didn't love it. It seems to lack some of the flair and sparklers of other songs.
Ooh, track 9. Sparklers.
Sparklers is slower, but in a way that makes sense. It's all about the pacing. They're slow jamming this one to let everyone catch their breath rather than trying to be a moody or bringing it down to be a bummer. It's here intentionally.
Yeah, it's an interesting shift, not just in the tempo, but also the tone, because they do like to be a moody band, and I like the reviews that call their music wistful. And so usually when you get the slower tracks from Buffalo Tom, it is them in that place, but this is still light, but still downbeat. There's something into this one that's just a little bit different for them.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it. And we're 9 tracks into the album, and they still continue to prove that they have range and are full of surprises. It's nice for them to have a song that's not a bummer, but doesn't clobber you over the head with the rock.
I'll give you that one. 10, clobbered.
Now, since the pace of things has slowed down a bit, instead of being predictable and jumping right back to the rock, they actually keep the pace down for a second round of vocals by Chris Colburn.
This one is kind of a bummer. We talked about the last one not being a bummer. This one is a bummer. It's a lot of regret.
It is.
But we've all had those relationships where it's just almost mutually destructive. Mm-hmm. And that's what the song is all about.
I do like his lyrical choices here. I mean, by no means are they any more straightforward than Bill's.
No.
I just like his using the word clobbered. I think it's strong imagery when talking about feelings and not necessarily the obvious choice.
It's not, because clobber has a lot more of a physical connotation to it, but he's making it known that he's not talking physical, because when he's talking about clobbering, it's about what, fingertips? That's not something you're going to physically hurt somebody with. So I think it's him letting us know it's an emotional, not a physical clobbering.
Right. It says, "I clobbered you with hands so indiscreet, march around like a soldier in defeat. I clobber mountains with my fingertips while you're alone on top of kissing lips. I clobber you and I clobber me.
You clobber me. You clobber me. You clobber me. You clobber me."
And now that we've beaten the word clobber into the ground,
let's attack a sundress.
Moving on to track 11, Sundress. Buffalo Tom jumps right back into the rock. And some almost coherent lyrics.
They are pretty coherent compared to other ones. A little less obscure, a little less to fill your try to figure out what they mean.
Yeah, they're not so disjointed. Says, "I want to hear your sad, sad voice come to me loud and clear. I want to hear your lips and tongue pour the words no ear should hear. Want to watch you while your face reddens with fear. Watch your eyes get all clouded up with tears. This thing is such a stupid mess. So much you never would have guessed. Better watch yourself. Watch your step. That verse actually kind of makes sense.
It feels very threatening, Mark. I feel unsafe when you read those words.
Really?
And I don't know how to segue the next song, which is song 12, 20 points, The Ballad of Sexual Dependency.
That's fair.
With track 12, Buffalo Tom doesn't just swing back into a mellower tempo. They make the jump into a track that's acoustic guitar driven, although there's an underlying electric guitar line throughout, and the only percussive sound for the first minute 40 are a steady woodblock clink. But at about the minute 40-ish mark, full drums come in, and they're soft, along with a nice, soft, twangy electric guitar solo. And this is the third and final track on the album to have lead vocals by Chris Colburn.
Now, the name of the track, which eludes segues, is a reference to a photo art exhibit from 1985 that was later turned into a photo book by Nan Golden that was titled The Ballad of Sexual Dependency, which itself was inspired by Bertolt Brecht's Threepenny Opera. In addition to inspiring this track, Golden's work from The Ballad of Sexual Dependency also inspired the cover art for the Afghan Whigs album Gentleman.
Cool. I don't know that one.
In The Ballad of Sexual Dependency, the focus is kind of getting gritty into personal lives of people who are counterculture. There's one photo in there that's a picture of her, and she's laying in bed looking at her lover, who's just sitting with his back to her on the edge of the bed smoking. And so the album cover for the Afghan Whigs Gentleman is a reference to that, but using younger children.
Oh.
And so it's a girl who's laying in bed looking at this boy who's sitting on the edge of the bed staring off into space. Everyone was upset by that because they were reading like sexual context into it, which I have never seen any of that when I look at it. What I see is the girl kind of has a look of admiration on her face, like she's into the boy, and the boy's just kind of there sitting on the edge of the bed looking like he's over the whole situation. And it just reads to me more like that point in a relationship where one person knows that they're done with it and the other person is completely oblivious to that fact. I've never looked at that album cover and thought that it was anything other than that. Maybe I'm just a prude, but I just enjoy how they conveyed that message with kids. Again, not because it's sexual in any way, but just that those feelings can potentially be universal.
You've been there.
Yes, I have.
And I am there.
What?
That's the look my wife has on her face every day. I have plenty of pictures I keep as souvenirs of her when she actually liked me.
I know you're making the segue, but
Song 13, Souvenir.
There is a nice rock shuffle quality to the music of this track.
There is.
And at this point in my notes, I was running low on ways to say that I love Buffalo Tom.
Well, I think what you just said was fine. And this is a good song. I like it. This song does slap.
Okay. With regards to the lyrics, the portion that jumps out at me that says, get a souvenir, take yourself a handful of sand, put it in your eye, his rubber band, you could be my good luck charm. That's so close to actually making sense, but not quite there.
But it's close enough to enjoy.
It is, but the fact that it's close but isn't there almost seems crueler than on the songs where it's just purely disjointed.
Song 14, Crueler.
In similar fashion to the prior two Buffalo Tom albums, since we haven't made any comparisons in a while, Sleepy Eyed comes to a close like those on a softer note rather than rocking it out. However, track 14 here, Crueler, isn't nearly as much of a bummer as Big Red Letter Day's Anything That Way or Crutch from Let Me Come Over, which on that one also serves as a reminder that that album is much more a collection of random songs that play together as individuals rather than flowing in the wonderful cohesive way that Sleepy Eyed does. And the other thing that I would say Crueler does, rather than just give us a nice cool down at the end of the record, it also leaves us with a song that is very much a quintessential Buffalo Tom song. It's slightly wistful, and there's an underlying twang thanks to some of the slide guitar texturing. The song itself, even though it starts slow, it manages to have moments that pick up the pace to a rock level on the chorus, and then those drop back down again. So it has those high and low dynamics throughout, and Colburn even offers some nice vocal harmony layers. And as a standalone piece, it's just a great showcase of who they are as a band and what they're about.
Not having all of that previous context, I can say this is a good closer for this album. I like the way you word that it's a nice cool down. It is. We've been on this journey and we're leaving on a good note. We're not too hyped up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with you. I have to say, listening to this album and what you told me about Buffalo Tom a couple times in the past, I'm a convert. I'm a Buffalo Tom fan.
Nice.
But I'm going to listen to Big Red Letter Day this weekend and get Let Me Come Over thrown into the mix. I'm not expecting to have the same level of affinity for those that I do this one. I'm still optimistic. It's going to be hard for anything to come out at this level.
I think you'll still be pleasantly surprised, though.
I'm still going to like it, I'm sure.
Yeah, like I said, this is my favorite of their albums, but I think those other two both have some songs that individually are some of their strongest songs. So I think you will still very much enjoy what you're hearing. I think there's going to be stuff in there that you're going to be very much into.
Cool.
And I hope that going through these songs in the way that we have, I have made my case to support my stance that this is Buffalo Tom's best work. However, one final caveat to the strength of them as a band, as I've mentioned, while I think this is their most solid album, and I've mentioned production-wise, it's on par with the prior two. I think that that is a testament to their own consistency. But in addition to that, that consistency itself is admirable because you got to remember that when they were making these albums, they were still very much as a band trying to get a solid foothold, trying to break through, trying to get notice. And it was all in the years that Nirvana roamed the earth. And they made these albums while the musical world was changing around them. And to their credit, in no way did that shake Buffalo Tom, who they were or how they sounded.
It is kind of interesting. I hadn't really thought about that aspect of what they were, I don't want to say up against, but what had been the common trend and how they maintained a unique sound apart from that.
Yeah.
Good job, Buffalo Tom.
Hooray. I know that on almost every episode we say it's hard to pick three, and this being my vote for their best album, it was another tough one. On albums like Let Me Come Over and Big Red Letter Day, I think it's easier to pick out the bangers because on those albums there's clear tracks that are not bangers, songs on those that don't slap. And here there's a consistency to the level that everything's at.
Yeah.
So that even what you could call their weakest songs on the album really are still contenders. And as a result, I have managed to pick three songs, but I have no real confidence that my choices will be my choices tomorrow, or that I have actually placed these in any kind of order that isn't constantly shifting.
Okay. All that sounds fair. And I'm just a fickle person, so I don't know what my top three will be tomorrow either.
Seeing as every conversation we've had about Buffalo Tom has been, hey, you should listen to Buffalo Tom. And then you pretty much ignore that statement. We've never talked about them. So I am really excited to hear what songs you pick because I have no idea.
Number three, I really like Souvenir.
Okay.
Like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I know where number one is, but I have a hard time coming up with the next one. I think I'm going to go with Rules because I like the opening so much.
Okay.
And I like how it sounds. It does sound like Dinosaur Jr., which is not a reason to like something because it sounds like something else. But that's my number two.
Don't knock liking something because it sounds like something else. Because as we've mentioned on prior episodes, that's entirely the reason that I have enjoyed Muse when I have enjoyed Muse.
This is true.
I like Muse when they sound like Radiohead or when they sound like U2.
Number one is going to be Summer.
Nice.
What are yours, Mark?
Number three is Kitchen Door.
Okay.
And that was one where, as you said, being more deliberate in my listens, finding things on there that stood out to me, there was a lot to that song that I realized that I really enjoyed. Kitchen Door was kind of the surprise sleeper hit for me on this review. Number two is Summer.
Dope.
And number one, I'm going to have to go with Sunday Night.
Okay.
I like how strong and emotive it is.
Nice. Let us know what you think. If you've been a Buffalo Tom fan or not, check us out on Instagram once every 2 weeks.
Well, thanks for listening. This has been another episode of Once Every 2 Weeks. Smell you later.
Once Every 2 Weeks is brought to you in part by Burro Borracho Records.